Honourable members, good morning. My apologies for starting late. You are all welcome for the Select Committee on Appropriation. We are in the process of deliberating and finalizing the Special Appropriation Bill as it has been adopted in the NA yesterday. And I want to believe that all the members have the necessary documents in front of them with the agenda. Do we have apologies, Governor? What's current?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I received an apology from Mr. Ryder. He's on his way, but he's running late. He will join us as soon as he has arrived.
But Karim is around. I came with him here. Okay. Honorable members, okay. Honorable State.
Just a humble request, if we can maybe put some, just lower the air con a little bit. I know there's clouds in the air. I don't know if I'm the only one that's cooking inside, but just a humble request for someone to attend to that.
Thank you. They'll attend to it. Honorable members, we are going to item number 3, which is the consideration and adoption of the draft report on Special Appropriation Bill B10 of 2019 reprint. But before that, honorable members, I just want to share with you this information. It's not a matter for discussion, but I just want to share with you that during yesterday, actually, and today, I have received a communique from Honorable Bartman. She's here from Western Cape Province. The crust of the matter on the correspondences or the letters that she has written to me is about the processes of public participation, the consultation. And I have responded to her yesterday to say public participation were done jointly with the Standing Committee on Appropriation. And according to us and legally, we have consulted, we satisfied ourselves that we have invited enough, we have invited the public to come and make their presentation and engage with their presentation, and that was done on our side. Going forward, I know that, but it's not on the special appropriation, on other bills going forward. We have discussed in the workshop that we have had previous month that we need to consider giving enough time for provinces to also apply their mind on the bills that they need to give a mandate on. That's what we have agreed upon and we have made a commitment on. But this is a section, this is a section 77 bill, which gives us time frames, and we don't have the luxury of time now, that it must be dealt with by the 30th of this month before we start with the MTBPS process and the DORA. So we don't have enough time. But I think I've done my part. I have responded and I have sought for a legal advice. And thanks for raising that concern and also to remind us that at some stage we have taken a decision and we must consider giving you enough time to do your part. Honorable Okam, please remember that I have said it's a matter for information sharing, not for...
Yeah, no, but due to the fact that it's for information sharing, I would like to have some information shared with us, Madam
okay.
Chair. As you have said, that it is important that public participation takes place, and you also said that according to you it has been done. I think it's very important going forward for this committee to be totally informed about what that public participation was and what the time frames was between inputs by the public or information that was given by the school. Could you please, we know that we've got a concern on the table that there was not enough public participation, and we've got an answer, no, there was. Can we then just be enlightened onto exactly how that process of public participation has been walked through, so that we as a committee, before we can go forward, can familiarize ourselves with that, and I agree on the fact that it was enough, or get to a point where we say there's still some more that needs to be done, please.
Thank you very much, Honorable Okam. I think the report does cover and indicate the stakeholders who have participated in the process. Our report on the special bill. That was the public participation, the consultation that we have done as the Joint Committee. Thank you.
Ma'am, I don't want to go into an argument because we're going to say A, B the whole time. That is precisely the point, that we are of the opinion that what is in the report is not sufficient. And I think it's very important for us to go forward, that this get tabled and that it gets discussed, and that we make sure that we don't run into a place where we're going to, at a later stage, get to a point where we do not have... where we get to a point where somebody says to us, but the process was flawed because of the fact that the public participation was flawed. We cannot just ram this through because we've got timelines that pressure us to do that. We've got to do this in the right way.
Honorable Jantu, I think now we have turned it into a discussion. It's no more information sharing.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. Good morning, Honorable Members. Chair, I think in terms of the point introduced by you as the chair, and also the outlining, how you outlined it in terms of the correspondence that you have received, I think it's acceptable in terms of your explanation. It's accepted, and then you made it clear that it is not going to be a discussion. So I would say that in terms of the information shared, that we take it in terms of a process going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? I think we agree that consultation or public participation was done, and members feel that was not enough. And as a committee going forward, we need to share the strategies as to how best do we think public participation can be done, other than what we have been doing. Honourable Members, there's a bill attached, and I hope members have gone through it. I want to believe that members have gone through it. It's a one-pager bill because it's a special appropriation bill. And at this stage, we are expected to adopt this bill. Honorable Members? It was what?
Sorry, I was just asking, are you giving it to us already? Thank you, Chairperson. And I apologize for my tardiness. Flight's really late because I think South African Airways is putting the same tricks as Eskom. You know, they use load shedding to pressurize us. Now it's flight delays to pressurize us for budget. That appears to be the latest trick. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair. I think that we've all had a chance to interrogate the bill. We've had a look at it. I want to say that I think that the situation we find ourselves in now is one where we're sitting with a gun to our heads and the trigger's about to get pulled. We've been put under great time pressure to pass this bill. It's a big bill. It's a multi-year bill. The process as a result has been flawed. And I think we can all agree that, you know, the joint meetings, the fact that we're meeting today as the select committee, after the National Assembly considered this bill yesterday, is confirmation that this process is being rushed and that it's flawed. Because the reality is, as an NCOP member, I need to wait for the National Assembly to sign off the bill, and I should then go and consult with the provinces. We represent provinces. I should go and consult with them to get a mandate. Between yesterday and this morning, I don't think that's an appropriate amount of time for any of us to have consulted extensively across the various provinces. And so we find ourselves sitting here without a mandate. So whatever we're putting forward here, I believe, is largely just a personal opinion, and we don't carry the mandates of the provinces that we purportedly represent. So I do believe the process has been flawed. I think that public participation has been a massive shortcoming as well with this. The fact that there have been so many joint meetings, I think we agreed to them initially, in the interest of keeping the process, you know, on track and making sure that we could get through the necessary processes timeously, and for the sake of, you know, cost saving and just common sense, I guess. So many joint meetings were held, and I think that's largely right. But to have this meeting so soon after the National Assembly has done their job, I think is inappropriate. To not consult properly with provinces through some sort of a participation process is dramatic. And I mean, the fact is that, Chair, I'm sure you have considerable pressures on your time. I know that the Honourable Karim was mentioning recently that he has huge pressures on his time with the various hats that he has to wear, and I think we're all in the same boat on the side of the table. The reality is that we gave up a huge amount of time to the processing of this bill. We had comments that resulted in newspaper articles talking about the fact that this bill is not a blank check, and I think those were your words, Chairperson, and you were echoing my sentiments in that meeting when you use those words. It's not a blank check. There must be conditions attached to it. We went to great lengths last week to discuss the conditions and then to look at various options of implementing them. You know, we had option one and option two and option three, and these things were all presented to us. And then what gets thrown back at us is effectively a rehash of nothing that we've recommended. I mean, we all agreed last week at the meeting that the conditions needed to be tightened up a little bit, that there needed to be some measurement that applied to them. They needed to be smart conditions, and that there needed to be accountability. And the reality is that this bill affects every single department in government. This bill affects every province and every municipality because it's taking money out of the pot. There's a finite pot. It's only a certain size. It's taking money out of that pot and giving it to Eskom. That money would have gone to provinces, municipalities, and departments to facilitate their programs and their projects. That's being taken away from them now. The fact that there's no conditions that are being applied in the bill that's gone through the National Assembly is a travesty. It's a slap in the face of this committee, because, you know, why did we sit? Why did we discuss them? Why did we discuss options 1, 2, 3 and agree that a combination of 1 and 3 was best, where we could put some of the conditions in the bill itself and then give the Minister of Finance the ability to add additional, you know, which is his right, add additional conditions onto the appropriation. So, Chair, I think that I am extremely unhappy with the bill that was processed through the National Assembly yesterday, and I think that, you know, we were all in agreement about these conditions, and they've gone away. I'm apoplectic. I'm mad. I'm mad as a snake because, you know, how can this be put towards us for a simple sign-off, and we're just going to roll over and say, well, you know, Eskom needs the money, otherwise our sovereignty is at risk or whatever the case may be, so we must give it. And then you have this extreme arrogance that's reported from Eskom again, where you have senior Eskom execs refusing to have state security investigate or do reports and checks on their backgrounds. You have Eskom execs not pitching up at the meeting last week with the select committee. I feel that Eskom is demonstrating to us that they've pushed us in a corner. They've demonstrated to us that, you know, we have to do this, otherwise the whole country's at risk. So now we must just do it and fit in with them. And I object to that, Chairperson. I object to that strongly, and I think we need to send a message back. We're not rolling over. We're not going to just sign off on this bill. Let us put conditions in that are measurable and that people want to see, because the people that put us here, South Africans that put us here in Parliament, want to see conditions on Eskom. Mr. Mboweni is on the front page of the Star newspaper this morning, and I'm sure many other newspapers, stating that money is not the only issue at Eskom. Management is the big issue, and a lot of those conditions spoke to management. So throwing money at them and not buttoning down or screwing down on the personnel issues within Eskom is not going to solve any problems. I feel that this bill needs substantial rework. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, honourable state.
Thank you, Chair. You must advise me now, is this open for vote at this stage, or are we just commenting? Just commenting. I'm supporting what the honourable member just said. I mean, we've spent about 83 million rand since 2006 on Eskom, with no dramatic changes that have taken place. Putting another 59 billion into the pot won't solve the problem. We're also looking at Eskom saying that they will do they are looking at transferring some of the debt to the state. Obviously, the state won't be able to carry that load. The way I see it, one of the main reasons why we are asked to avail these funds to Eskom is to lure overseas investments into Eskom to say, no, everything is hunky-dory, come and invest, put more money into this pot. But it's not going to save Eskom. This is in a downward spiral at this stage. And I'm going to put it blunt by saying putting more funds into Eskom is not going to save it. That's not the answer. The problem must be spoken to. And that is the people that currently work for Eskom and the fact that no maintenance has been done up to now.
Any other member that want to comment on the issues here? Yes, Honourable Kila.
Okay, no, thank you, Chair. I think let's appreciate the concerns which have been raised by the colleagues. But I think we have now journeyed to the point where we are. And we equally have raised all these concerns. Where we are now, we think that we are convinced that there is a turnaround strategy in place which will prevent a recurrence of what has been happening in the past, given all the restructuring that is taking place at Eskom. We don't think when we arrive into the new financial year next year, we'll be talking the same language. We are hopeful that there is a turning point in terms of what is being done to that institution. So where we are, I would move that we should support this bill and actually approve against that background, that we are aware that a lot is being done, and we are actually very hopeful that with the measures that have been taken by the President of separating Eskom into three, to restructure it into three different sort of organs, will help us to prevent the current trajectory of always coming up with a bailout. So I think that let's have comfort that at least come 2020, we will see a different picture. So with that view, I think I want to move that we approve.
Honourable Oka.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the problem with this is that I can imagine that a few years ago somebody said exactly what Honourable Makiva said now. Let's pay the money. We believe things will be right. It was not. Because of the fact that certain stuff weren't put in place. We are, in a lot of cases, being treated or seen, the NCOP, as, why are we actually here? Are we then, as some of the accusations are, that we are just a rubber stamp for the NA? If we are going to do this, we are going to plead guilty to all those silly accusations. We are the NCOP. We sat during a lot of meetings discussing this, having in the meetings agreement, and I'm echoing what Dennis has said regarding this. We all felt that there need to be certain bars and certain requirements in place. We're just not going to just give the money. That is what we have agreed. Now why then get to a point where all that we have said to each other in all these committees are not enforced here? Why are we just the rubber stamp that just got to listen to what the NA say? Why are we not doing our jobs? Again, we are here on behalf of the provinces. This money is given to Eskom and taken away from the provinces. Let's say for a moment that it is necessary and it will happen. Then we at least owe those provinces the responsibility to make sure that the money that has been taken from them will be applied in the correct way and then will be managed in the correct way. But we have no measures in place. To come and to say that the president has announced that it will be divided, Eskom will be divided in three portions, that still does not tell us that the people that's getting the money, the management of Eskom that must work with this money, will work with it in a correct way. So are we now just a rubber stamp for the NA's decisions, or are we going to say to the NA, you know what, we are not happy with this, and you need us, we are acting on behalf of the provinces, and for one stand up and say, please put these and these requirements in place, then we will be happy. So let's rather go back to them and say, this is what we want. Get your house in order and then send it back to us. I plead with you, ma'am, if we are not going to do this, we are going to be a puppet on strings and the NA are pulling all those strings. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karim.
I think in broad terms, some of the things at least that members of the DA and EFF are saying are no different from what the ANC said. But as I understand it, it's a money bill. There is no constitutional, we can ask advocate James, or legal requirement for this bill, unlike a 1676 bill, to go through the six-week cycle process. So Advocate Jenkins should reply. So that's the wrong thing to say. Now, if members are basing that argument on consultation with the provinces as a prerequisite, then what we are doing is illegal. I hope Mr. Alcock is listening. Then what we are doing is illegal, in which case it is your job. Whether you like the chairperson or not is irrelevant. Right? It's your job to tell us, people, I am a legal services unit representative here. It is my job to tell the committee that what you are doing is wrong. If we decide to go ahead and do it, there's nothing you can do. Right? So the first question should be addressed, I think, is there a constitutional or legal requirement for us to go to the provinces as part of the six-week cycle process, as we would in the Section 76 vote? My understanding is no, but you must give a legal opinion, not a lawyer. That's the first point. The second point is that if we were to operate the way the DA and to a lesser extent the Freedom Front Plus are saying, the entire cycle of Parliament would have to change. It is impossible. My own view, as I've consistently said to you, Comrade Chair, and others, this system is too sophisticated for our country. Too sophisticated. I've said it. I hadn't realized how sophisticated this system is. It's just too sophisticated for us, for our resources, capacity, and the state of an emerging democracy. But it is where it is. We have passed many similar bills in this way It has never been challenged in a court of law. And we should ask Frank Jenkins for advice, because that's his job. On the matters of conditions, I entirely agree. So the rubber stamping thing, I don't agree with. I also think it's an insult, especially to you and me, experienced kids as we are, but people have a right to insult us. That's a democratic right. But we can also insult them back. And we will. But for now, I think there's no need for that. Because the substance of what they're saying, I don't disagree with, actually, personally. And I don't see you, Chair, disagreeing with it. I know your views, and I know our discussions in the study group. The entire ANC, as I understand it, or almost all of us, we're agreeing with the points being made by the gentlemen here, the colleagues. And the anger expressed by Mr. Ryder in particular, which is a bit unfair stress on him given his family circumstances at the moment, may I add, so ESCOM owes him for that. By the way, I think they have a good point. You see, look, there's one representative here, with due respect to him, from National Treasury. How many were there on the NA? I think you should write to the PG and find out, with due respect to you, what's your level, Yura? With due respect to you,
Good morning, Honourable Member. Chair, sorry, I'm a Chief Director at the National Treasury.
That's below a DDG.
Yes.
Okay, that's senior enough. But one member is here. Is it because they take it for granted that we're just going to agree to this problem? Why have they not brought their senior above a Chief Director? Well, they may not have. There was a woman there, I thought, who was there, and there were three of you at least on the NA side. So will you convey to your DG, and we are a mandated chairperson, to write to the DG to find out why they just sent one person instead of three? Is it presupposing that we're just going to understand this problem? So, I mean, the point they are making is no different from what we feel as the Congress. No different. The anger you feel also is the anger we feel. But the point is, look, we are where we are. Personally, I have a right to a view because there's no, like, formal position of a conference or an NEC decision, which also doesn't mean we must just mechanically apply. I don't think there's any clarity of where ESCOM will be a year from now. And nobody would believe anybody who says, don't worry, let's do this a year from now. Hey, things will be hunky-dory. And I don't think that's what my comrade is saying. He's too sophisticated. And he doesn't insult your intelligence to reply. I don't think he's saying that. What we are saying, though, is the reverse. That if we don't do this and do it on time, the whole country will collapse. That's not even debate. Their institution, so to speak, their ideological brothers and sisters, right? The rating agencies and the IMF and World Bank, who have made that clear, right? It's not coming from the Communist Party, it's coming from their ideological family, right? You don't sort this come out, you're finished. I've just come from a conference which I'll report to you on shortly, right? Parliamentary Network on the World Bank thing. And I attended the annual meetings of the IMF and World Bank. This issue keeps coming up. From our fellow other countries in Africa, they're worried about ESCOM. So, let me put this to you. It's not that we are saying that if we give this money now, hey, things are going to be hunky-dory next year. No, that's not what we're saying. But we are saying the reverse. If we don't act promptly, we're all plunged into crisis. Right? As it is, the DA has got enough of a problem, right? Can you imagine now when the country has a blackout, right? It won't just be a DA blackout that's happening right now. Okay, I withdraw it, so don't come back and attack me. I withdraw the statement. But the point I want, that's a good one, funny. That's a good one, give me a five. That's a good one, no funny intention, but a blackout. Yeah. So you could use it against the Freedom Front Plus when the elections come in 2021. But no, look, you know what, I am not spinning. Listen, part of a politician's job, even Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King and so on, and Mandela was one of the greatest, is to spin, right? I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart, the tenor and timber and tone of Dennis Ryder, apart from his thing with his rubber stamp, I entirely agree with. So obviously I agree with the other speakers. The issue that arose, and this is where National Treasury should be challenged, Comrade Chair. National Treasury must answer. Why is it we are told, and you must speak to your colleagues from the DA and Freedom Front Plus, we are told that National Treasury presented an argument. As I understood it, Dennis, where we didn't agree with the DA when we were meeting jointly, and maybe didn't come across, I'm going to say you'll guide us, I think where we disagreed with the DA was that, yes, we would like it to be in the PIRL, the condition, but it is impossible to be so rigid and dogmatic, and because if you have to change the thing, we can't anticipate what's going to happen, right? So what we agreed on was there will be conditions that go into regulations. My understanding is that you people explained to the National Assembly Committee that if you were to put it in regulations, if I understand you correctly, my friend, I've forgotten your name, what's your name?
My name is Ravesh Rajlaw.
Ravesh?
Yeah,
Ravesh. You know what? If I'm correct, you guys said that, no, if you do that, it's almost equating to putting it in the law, because the minister has to first regulate, the regulations have to be tabled, you'll never be able to release the money, you can forget it, it's a crisis, right? That's the reason. You must convince this committee, you may have convinced that committee. It revolves around that. It's a practical matter. It's not a policy matter, right? So firstly, you must convince us that it cannot be done. It's his task, not our job. They're the executive, right? Secondly, I don't think we should vote on the bill without looking at the report simultaneously. Because I think they do have a case. I think they do have a case that if you put it in, I didn't think this through myself, Comrade Chair. Imagine all my experience. If you put it in regulations, obviously the minister has to gazette the regulations, even if we don't have to adopt it, etc. Right? We put a loose form of regulations. Maybe Frank Jenkins can help us. That will mean a delay 4 to 6 weeks. If we think Parliament has approved, that will mean next year. So there may be reasons, but you must convince us. It's solely on those grounds, Comrade Chair, I think that the ANC can possibly agree. But the other thing that strikes me, Comrade Chair, is these are political matters. Ideally, the minister or deputy minister should come. It's not his job. He's a technocrat, right? It's not your job. But secondly, the committee chairperson or the whip from that side should come here and explain to us the politics of the decision-making. I have been asked as a National Assembly committee chair to come here on the sugar beverages tax, on the PIC bill or other bill, right? Right? And so on. So I think in a situation like this, we should do that. Finally, I think the report is weak. I'll just read it again. It's a very weak report, actually, from the side of the... And they're not strong enough. Nothing stops us from strengthening the report. Let's take into account what the members have said. We can even put in something if people agree like this. If you mandate me, I can draft something, Chairperson. You can give it to the technocrats, three of them, and four of them. To say something like this, the committee is something like excruciating. You acutely aware that giving money, it's covered there, but we should put it stronger, giving money to ESCOM can be, in effect, throwing that money into an empty hole. I'll find the right word somewhere, right? And we were of the strong view when we met with the NA committee that the conditions should be put in regulation. However, if he convinces us, then we can say. So we must strengthen the other aspects. One, the minister or the deputy minister or DG must appear before the joint committees once every 6 weeks or something to report on progress. The structure that must be set up to monitor must be both a national treasury and a DPE one, so that both, because that's the portfolio, DPE, that we want to alert the executive that it's not as if this ESCOM crisis has fallen from the sky. We've been aware of it from 2008, Dennis. I was chair of public enterprises at the time. We've been praising ESCOM because it's regarded as the world's biggest energy producer and regarded as one of the top three global. We were regarded by international agencies as amongst the top three public entities in the world. Am I right? That's 2007 when I was chairing public enterprises. Look where we are now. It was embarrassing. 18 months after we wrote a report congratulating Tulani Tabashi and so on for the way they managed. We're so proud that our own country is number three in the world, right? the Chinese one was number one. I don't remember what you guys remember. The point provided. I'm just saying, though, so look where we are. So in short, I think our report should be tougher. But we also need to alert you as Treasury that don't come to us like this with a bill as important as this, right, and expect us to process it so quickly. That is one thing that you rightly said. It's the gravity and magnitude of the bill. Don't come to us. Don't tell us you didn't know. That's your problem. You're the executive. You meant to monitor them, right? So this thing, we must make it clear, is unacceptable to us. Unacceptable to us that we must process it in the way we've done. And it's like a threat, you know? As Dennis Ryder, I think, said, oh, if you don't do it, the whole country will collapse. I think you are right. But don't use it as leverage unfairly on Parliament. And convey that message to your minister, to our minister. And we should do that in the debate. I don't think we have anything to hide here. The ANC itself must stick by what it believes in, and we must tell the minister. That is why we are alerting you now, as the chairperson. We want the minister or deputy minister here in the debate. And I think we should mandate the chairperson to write to the House Chair, Maswondo, the House Chair, Nyambi Jomo, and the Chief Whip of the NCOP, and say that we insist that either the Minister or Deputy Minister is here, and we the ANC, they can say what they want to say. I would suggest we the ANC, Jadu, you the Comrade, you the Whip here. We must do it. It's our job. This must end. So we must put strict conditions on National Treasury and the government as a whole. The days are over where you just come here. Okay, having said that, I would like to suggest, Comrade Chair, that one of the things we need to clarify is it legal? Is it legal what we are doing? Do we have to go back to the provinces? And then, Comrade Chair, I think we must really ask Treasury to explain convincingly.
Ntate
Bulesan?
Thank you, Chair. One needs to just to allude unhappiness on the bill, even though the bill is at a very advanced stage. This bill seems to be concentrating more on the problem of the ESCOM. And one wonders whether are we really dealing with the problem, or do we have to concentrate on the cause of the problem? Because if you don't deal with the cause, it means that the problem is still going to mushroom again. That's why there's no guarantee when we say that if ESCOM get a cash, that they are going to sustain forever. But because now, if you look at that, there are no enforcement of the remedies to the problem, to say these are the causes that made ESCOM to be today. And if we can deal with these causes, then we'll be sure that ESCOM will never go back to this stage again, especially about the leadership, especially about the governance. They are weak. And if we give them cash with the same leadership, without skills, with a weak governance, are they not going maybe to mess up again with that cash? Thank you very much.
I wanted to summarize so that we can have a way forward, but I see Honorable Okam wants to speak. Honorable Tutete, you're fine.
Yes, Chair. It's a clarity-seeking question with regards to Honorable Karim. He said that he was there and everything was fine, and afterwards it collapsed. So my question is, what did he plan while he was there, before he left, that might have resulted in the collapse? Honorable Chair, maybe I've been shot in the foot a bit, but what was said now. But I wanted to say, I think we should all write down today's date. It's not often that you get a committee of this parliament where everybody, in actual fact, agree. From the ANC, DA, EFF, Freedom Front, we are actually agreeing on this. And I don't think that happens a lot in this parliament. The question is, what are we going to do about this? There has been, from the Committee of Appropriations and Finance from the Western Cape government, there has been a letter that was sent with certain conditions that they felt that we must give through. Let me just read you a few of them. And I think that that are stuff that we can easily implement on this. That to impose conditions in this bill to indicate the exact functions for which ESCOM must use this $59 million. To impose conditions that the Minister of Finance must report to National Parliament within 3 months of the promulgation of Act regarding the implementation of the Act. That on all main divisions, current payments, transfers and subsidies, payment of capital assets and payments of financial assets that are allocated to ESCOM, that all procurement contracts entered into by ESCOM be reviewed and all contracts considered wasteful, irregular and or poor value must be reported to the Minister of Finance. Here's another one, easy one. Impose conditions for ESCOM to formalize a plan to separate its distribution and transmission operation. They must formalize it and its generation capacity into separate businesses, business units within 12 months. Imagine what will happen if the following is not going to be agreed to. Impose conditions that no bonuses be paid to any executive at ESCOM until ESCOM's debt is at a reasonable level, which reasonable level must be determined by the Minister of Finance. Year on year, bonuses are paid. I think it's time that we close those tabs. I'm going to carry on. That the NA, NAFSA, and the Minister of Finance must assess ESCOM's assets in order to determine its asset base. That a white paper be drafted on the future on ESCOM and must be produced to ESCOM within 2 months of the promulgation of the Act. To impose conditions as Section 34 determinations of the Electricity Regulation Act be considered by the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy for financial sound municipalities, and to impose conditions for ESCOM to support municipalities with generation and distribution in a financially sustainable manner. These are but a few of the conditions that we can put in there. If we are not going to do this, what's going to force ESCOM to in any way get a line in line with what we are wanting them to do? Then we are just a blank check, which we should not be. We're giving them an open check. They will come back and they will, in 2 years' time or in 1 year's time, say to us, we need X billion again, and we won't have any force over them to give us the requirements that we want them to adhere to in order to get this money and to apply this money correctly. Thank you.
Honourable Members, Chandu, I thought he's going to be the last, but I'm going to allow you to speak. No, speak.
No, Chair, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think one needs only to emphasize from the Select Committee in the NCP that I think we from the beginning, we have made it very clear and emphasized that how serious we are around this bill. And so that we not say that we are sitting here today and just rubber stamping. It's not a rubber stamp. We went through all these processes and we discussed, we spent a lot of time discussing conditions. And also we emphasize in terms of how we'd want to see when this bill is approved in terms of accountability to ESCOM. And I think for us is to make it clear that As the NCOP, I would want to agree with Honourable Karim that we have to take collective responsibility with the NA in terms of accountability and with National Treasury, so that we know that what we are doing today is not just a thumbsuck, and to say that we look at it as to the crisis when we are not going to approve, but we have to look in terms of how do we address in terms of accountability, to hold ESCOM accountable and to make sure that ministers playing a very important role in terms of making sure ESCOM is being kept accountable and we don't repeat the same problem. Thank you.
Honourable Members, thank you all for your comments. And I'm going to start by the difference between Section 76 and Section 77 bill. We are dealing with Section 77, which does not require us to seek mandate from the provinces. And as we, after this, we're going to deal with the DORA, which is a Section 76 bill, We will, hence, yesterday when I provided to you or presented the program, there's a date whereby we have to go and seek mandate from the provinces. And according to the law, FFC have made a presentation. We had a consultation with FFC and PBO by law. And public participation, we had AUTA, COSATU, Alternative Information Development Center, Sishuk Valley, Pride Prayers, and Resident Association, and individuals have made a presentation. That is Mr. Sikwale, Mr. Gaston, Mr. SA Online Paul. According to the Section 77 bill that we are dealing with, I think we have done what possibly we could have done. Now that we are going to Section 76 bill on DORA, we will be going to provinces, and we need to put that behind our mind as we do those consultations. I'm sure you have already received, Honorable Member, an invitation from me inviting you in the other processes as we deal with the 76 bill. Honorable Members, I am still where I was, and nothing is going to change me. And as I was, who Mr. Honorable Ryder says is angry, I was disappointed more than angry yesterday when I was watching the debate, because I'm the one who felt that for the first time as a country, as Parliament, we're working as one, we're united. The ESCOM issue, or the challenges in ESCOM, are uniting us. And when I was watching there, it was a different game ball. The disappointment that I came into is that we said to the department, we want stringent conditions. And the conditions that were presented to us, I personally said that they don't have to. They are not, they don't have land on it to show us that this is the sixth parliament. And rubber stamping is not something that we're prepared to do. With the understanding of the time pressure, the crisis, and the aftermath that might come with us disapproving the bill, I'm agreeing with Honorable Karim that the executive authority must be there in the House to deal with this thing. It was said yesterday jokingly, the other House, but Tina, we are taking it serious. We are not the other House. They must be present there, and we want senior people to come to our meetings so that we are shown we are taken serious. We are not happy the way things have been done, and we will be expressing those things as we present the report. Yesterday, I requested members that the report has been sent to you last week. Anything that you are not happy with, you want to strengthen the report as Honorable Karim is proposing, let's do that to strengthen the report. But also as we go and present the report to the House, we need to be very firm on Treasury, but not only Treasury, ESCOM and Department of Enterprise, the three of them. I'm really disappointed of what I saw yesterday in the NA. But it's up to us as the NCOP delegates on what to do. Before we go any further with how we are going to deal with the report, because already Honorable Karim has identified the weaknesses on the report, I'll request the Advocate Jenkins to speak to the difference between Section 76 and 77, as requested. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members, colleagues, and PNG friends. ma'am, I think you've correctly summarised it, and Mr. Karim, first of all, it is my job to advise the committee whether the process is constitutional, and I must take responsibility for that. Hence, you did ask my legal advice on the letter from the Western Cape chairperson of their committee. I've also consulted with colleagues. What we did do, on, I think it was 11 September, still, we had a joint public hearing in M46. I was there as well. No amendments was done to the bill. And as I understand the constitutional obligation to facilitate public involvement, when you do have a Section 75 process, because the money bill, Section 77 bill, goes through that same process in terms of the constitution. You can have joint public hearings, it's not a problem. However, if there is substantial changes to a bill, I would always advise the NCOP committee to have further public hearings. In other words, if the NA went back and deliberated to change the bill, we haven't had public hearings on that amendment bill. And the NCOP has a responsibility and an obligation in terms of the Constitution to facilitate public involvement even on 75 bills / 77 bills. In this instance, I think it was done. Legally, not in my personal opinion. So the crux issue which came out of that letter as well, that the time period from the NA passing it and this committee considering it and reporting on it, that to me is not a legal constitutional issue. That might be a policy issue that people wanted to go back and consult with provinces, correctly so. It could have been done at another time because the bill was an amendment, but that's not my place to comment on it. But it's not a legal impediment, as I understand the obligation to facilitate public involvement. It's critical to remember even the Constitutional Court said that it's for Parliament to decide how to facilitate public involvement. There's no set rules. Parliament has made certain rules for itself. Some of them comes from the Money Bills Act, some of them are in the rules, but I'm not concerned that we transgress any of those rules in this instance. So ma'am, that's the one part what I wanted to say. What is important when we're looking at public participation, and stop me if I'm going off script here, ma'am, is that sometimes the substance of legislation is so controversial or impactful that one needs to look at public participation more carefully. It does not mean that we need to redo what we've done at the joint meeting, but what I'm trying to say is that because of this kind of legislation, I get the sense from the committee committee wants to do more. And I got the same sense, ma'am, in Mr. Buthelezi's committee, the Standing Committee on Appropriations. And we have identified that we wanted to further legislation, we want the minister to bring further legislation. Of course, the committee can make further legislation as well. If it's not a money bill, only the minister can bring a money bill. We are expecting the MTBPS, which will have a three-year fiscal framework attached to it. There is an opportunity, both for the NA and the NCOP, to deal with that and to look at the impact that the outer fiscal years, or the fiscal framework for the outer years, how that will impact on provinces and their finances. And a lot of it has been set out in the report that was sent on. From the Western Cape, because I think all government departments, including legislatures, are getting the briefing from Treasury. My colleague can correct me that in the next 3 years, we have to do with less money. I think it's 6%, 7%, and 7% that we'll do 20% over 3 years. And that's radical, if I can put it like that. Why is it radical, ma'am? And I've said it before in the Appropriations Committee, in the Standing Committee on Appropriations. There's a constitutional obligation on government to progressively realize socioeconomic rights, including right to health, shelter for children at least, and education, to just name a few, but there's water and sanitation and all of these as well. Now, if Eskom is going to drain resources, man, this government, in my view, might fall short of that constitutional obligation, which will place the entire budget at a risk of being reviewed by a court and being found unconstitutional. So you'll really be between a rock and a hard place. On the one side, we'll have rating agencies saying, pay us, or we're going to downgrade you, and there's no investment. On the other hand, we have a constitutional obligation to progressively realize the socioeconomic rights, and the South African Human Rights Commission is supposed to submit a report to Parliament annually on those. So that's the MTBPS area which one can look forward and say, look, if your budget does not comply, if we can't have money for socioeconomic rights, how are we going to comply with socioeconomic rights? Then we have the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill that will also come attached to the adjustments budget, which one can look at. But man, generally, this committee, as well as the NA counterparts, as well as public enterprises, nothing stops them from calling ESCOM and expressing the sentiments that I heard this morning to ESCOM itself. Nothing stops any committee doing that in the public eye. We don't have to go to ESCOM, where I think the public could not participate in that manner. There's also issues within the House. Political parties can request a debate of national importance and set the day aside, like we did with gender violence. If ESCOM is posing a fiscal risk to the whole country, nothing stops the houses from debating it. So there are ways of getting these conditions out there and requiring that there's compliance. Although at this point in time, procedurally, we couldn't put all the pieces of the puzzle together to put it in legislation, simply because of the stronghold that the rating agencies and the need to deal with that contractual debt that ESCOM is under. So I'm going to stop there, and I'm just wanting to emphasize that for the committee to realize that there's much more that can be done, and there's a strategy that can be worked out, but it's above my pay grade to come into the strategy. Thanks, ma'am.
And furthermore, after what we have said, what Honorable Okam said about the additions or the conditions coming from Western Cape, I think most of the things are there. Issues of the payment of the senior management, the plan to separate the distribution, the bonuses of the executive, we have spoken about most of these things. The difference might be the wording, but the content, I think, is the same. What we need to consider is what Advocate Jenkins is advising us. How best can we maneuver around these things so that at the end of the day, we get what we think needs to be done. We have made commitments previously when we had the platform, even in the committees. And the public is looking at us, that we have sent these people and they've made this commitment. It will start with us to say, are we up to the commitments? Are we keeping those commitments? So, Honorable Karim, you have identified a weakness. You want to make addition on the report. Can we entertain that, please?
National Treasury to explain itself. What is the problem so that we understand it? And we need to put it in our report clearly. It's not put here clearly. In fact, what we have done, colleagues, is when we write our reports, we write our own reports as the committees. But sometimes we say, this is National Treasury's argument. So whatever you say, we will need it in writing. So that we'll say, this is what National Treasury said. It's why we can't put it in regulations. And this is our response. So can you, can our note taker also note clearly what he's saying? I'll try to also slide it in.
You need to convince us. But what you must know that is that you will not convince us from our initial position.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think firstly, I would like to apologise on behalf of the Treasury. Obviously, I have sent a message to the Treasury colleagues just to advise them that we should be sending more senior representation in future, so that will be adhered to, and I think we'll send a formal response to the committee as well. Chair, I just want to take members back to the Feb 2019 speech by the Minister of Finance, where he mentioned or he outlined that funding will be provided for Eskom of 20 billion per year over the next 10 years. Subsequent to that announcement, it then became apparent around about April that that the 20 billion had to be brought forward much earlier than during the latter part of the financial year, and that's why the Minister of Finance had to invoke Section 16 of the PFMA to bring forward part of the 20 billion. So up to now, around about 13 billion has already been transferred to Eskom. And what has also transpired during the course of this financial year is that lenders to Eskom has also not been supporting them to the extent that they should be supporting them. So that's also now taken them out of the market in terms of trying to get funding to support them. So basically they haven't fully funded or the funding plan has not been fully funded for the financial year. So what has then happened is that there has been then a requirement or request to say that they will need much more funding than the 20 billion announced in 1920. So that amount now has increased to by an additional 26 billion. And from the daily cash flows and the daily calls that we have with Eskom, we see the daily cash flows, and what we're seeing is that in terms of the funding that has already been announced or appropriated, that funding will run out very, very shortly in the next few weeks, basically. So the 20 billion that's been announced, that won't last them until the end of the 1920 financial year, which ends at the end of March 2020. So what has then, or the request when we have met with Eskom and the Department of Public Enterprises to say that additional funding will have to be provided, and that's part of the request that we have provided for in terms of the special appropriation, to say that additional funding will have to be provided, but also the disbursements or the release of those funding of the funds will have to happen much quicker, which means that somewhere around November there will be an additional request to then disperse funds much quicker. So, Chair, through you, if we, and obviously I'm not a legal person, so I just need the Honourable Advocate Jenkins to help you with the legal side, is that if we do include the conditions as regulations, our understanding that it will take much longer than November to be approved, so that and it may be later than November, which means that the funding over and above the 23 billion will not be released quicker, which means that Eskom will find itself in a dire liquidity position. So the request is that that the conditions, or that part of the conditions or some of the conditions be included in the Minister of Finance's letter, and the rest in actual regulations, so that funds can then be released in November. Because if funds are not released during November, then Eskom finds itself in a position where it will not be able to meet debt obligations, interest payments, and it could result in a default. So hence the urgency and hence the request for the special appropriation process to provide additional funding, but also to release funding much quicker than we initially, or that Eskom initially had projected. So the I think the situation is very dire. I think we did raise this in the previous meetings in the joint committee, that the situation at Eskom is not, at the moment we see it as, they don't see it as a business unusual approach. Just to the honourable member around the cost cutting initiatives, and to what Advocate Jenkins has mentioned, is that if government is cutting budget by 5, 6, 7%, we don't see the sense of urgency from ESCOM to look at cost cutting, to look at cost cutting as well. And we did mention 2 weeks ago that there could be a probability that there is a 20 billion rand risk to the liquidity. So over and above the 49 billion, there is a further liquidity risk that could go up by another 20 billion. And that's something that we have pushed back to ESCOM together with the Department of Public Enterprises to say that ESCOM must find it in their budget to ensure that they cut costs to meet the potential risks. So we just want to, I just want to highlight that as well, just to reemphasize that ESCOM and other estate and companies have to also look at their own budgets to cut costs, because government is also looking at cutting costs, but they also need to, practice the same, approach that the government is taking. Chair, I'm hoping that I wasn't too technical in my explanation, but I'm open to just to explain further if maybe my response was too technical. But basically, the urgency is that it's much more required and much quicker. And funds will be required in November, because they will be running out of the cash in terms of the first tranche of the 23 billion.
Okay, thank you, Rajesh. I will now take questions of clarity from the students.
Too technical. The problem is you're not technical enough. You're telling us about the urgency of the money in these, we understand. What we're asking you is, why can't it be put in regulations? We want your explanation. From what I can see, you're giving us the point that you're saying that if we put it in regulations, it will hold back the release of the money, okay, because of gazetting and so on. So we want you to write a full sentence, a paragraph, go to your lawyers, I don't know why they're not here, your advisor. You have to explain that. You're not explaining that. Secondly, there's a concern about the default. Well, it was explained in sentences properly. What do you mean by that, right? Are you trying to tell us that, let's say, if we put it in regulations, then it would mean the earliest the minister can release the money is the first week of December instead of the first week of November? Are you trying to tell us that if there's 1 month difference, the default, what do you mean by default? That's what we want. So, to be fair to you, we didn't say that it's about seniority. A chief director is below a DDG. You're the third in the hierarchy. That's not a seniority. It's the number of people who are here. It's the team that's here. For example, you're more like giving us policy explanation. But I imagine one or other of your colleagues, if they were here, they'd be able to give us a more technical explanation about what's the problem in putting it in regulation. I don't think you're answering that question, with due respect to you. So maybe you need some help from your colleagues. I don't know, the chair, acting chair, what we can do. In previous circumstances, we have said that this is the committee's view, but we will give you 20 words or 3 lines or 5 lines that you can slide in to the report at about 2 o'clock. Then we send the report out to all the parties. They look at it. Usually they have never, in the 5 years I chaired in the Standing Committee of Finance, questioned the, once we've approved the report, what Treasury has given us. We just record your words. And then we will say something after that, like, the committee strongly believes, blah, 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 whatever we believe or what you say. But what I'm trying to say is, colleagues, I don't think you're convincing, actually. You're not explaining to us. You're not answering the question. Can you help? Can you help, or can Advocate Jenkins? It's not his job, but because he's been there, he'll come to your rescue. But you're not answering the question. All you're simply saying is, the money will be held up, fine. And you're concerned about the default, not explaining what that means in simple language. So we can give you some space. If the colleagues agree, within an hour of this meeting ending, you've got an email to the secretaries and to the chair, your explanation for why you can't do it. But can Advocate Jenkins help, Comrade Chair? I don't know. That's not an answer.
No, that's not it. I think he's going to call a friend. As we said yesterday, we have a meeting. Yeah, okay. Honourable Ryder.
Thank you, Acting Chair. The information given to us by the learned gentleman from Treasury, and I mean, he mustn't underestimate himself. I think we respect him, and he's shown himself and his qualities through the last few meetings that I've seen him presenting to us. But the assertions that he's made now, the fact that Eskom is not grasping the business unusual situation that has arisen. Eskom is not really demonstrating a willingness to do cost cutting, to change things around a little bit. And they're coming back asking for more, which they can't ask for. I don't believe there's a legal framework for them to ask for anything more in the current financial year. So they can't do that, sorry. But yeah, the fact that they are so arrogant and feel that they're in a position where they can make demands and not make any changes is all the more reason why the conditions of the loan need to be enforced, need to be placed in the legislation, at least some of them, if not all of them, so that we can get them to stick to these things. Because all that we need is for a change in ministers, and a new minister will come in and scrap all the conditions or requirements that are being placed on, and then, you know, it's back to a blank check. That is if we do not put the conditions in the legislation. If we put the conditions in the legislation, that means any amendments, changes to those conditions need to actually be served before Parliament. And I go back to the point, I want to reject the bill in its current form and demand that we place conditions like we agreed to last week in committee. Some of the conditions must be part of the legislation and some must be imposed by the Minister of Finance. How he does that in terms of regulations, again, I'm with Honourable Karim and saying, you know, show us exactly what you mean by the time delays, because I'm not getting it. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I'm only too keen to reject the entire bill, refer it back to the National Assembly and say bring it back with the conditions as discussed in the joint meeting with some of those conditions in there. Treasury needs to advise on that. That was the agreement that we had as far as I was concerned. Thank you.
Honourable debate.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, through you to the gentleman from Treasury. Sir, I want to know, obviously, you said that you were in the... you managed to look at the financial statements of Eskom and it's applied to you on a regular basis. What amount is needed additionally? Because it seems as if this 59 billion... is just there to soften the blows a little. What amounts are they looking at to get out of the problem? And over what time period would those funds be needed?
Okay, I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond. Perhaps maybe Advocate Jenkins would like to have a take. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. When this matter was discussed before the Standing Committee on Appropriations, I did consult my colleague in Treasury, MP van Schoor, about the area of conditions. There's various problems with, or challenges, I should say. The first is that the bill as it is at the moment, the Special Appropriation Bill, does not provide that the Minister can impose these conditions by regulations. So we'll have to make an amendment to the bill, which then kicks in time frames for the Minister to respond, additional public hearings on the amendments, and that risked that we could have to release the money by the end of this month or be in a position to authorize the release of the money. That is what I was told in consultation with my colleague MP van Schoor. The response then was...
Why is she not here? Because you can't answer the question. Here he is. Parliament's doing your job. Governor Chair, this is unacceptable. He's representing Parliament. That's a very good answer. I forgot about that. The Money Bills Act procedure, right? Mm-hmm. The same applies here, the special bill. That will take us. There's the answer to begin with. You didn't even address that issue. Where's MP? Why is she not here?
But don't you want maybe Advocate Jenkins to complete?
Fine. But you know, it's really now, well, now it's riling me, actually. Because
yeah.
He gave a,
I understand.
Yeah, he gave
I
a terrible answer.
Just conclude your point and then we can...
Thank you, Chair. The alternative, with discussion with MP said, but doesn't the Public Finance Management Act give that authority generally? And we looked at it and the Public Finance Management Act does not allow the Minister generally to make regulations on appropriation bill. That should be in the bill itself, that authority for the Minister to make regulations. So I think the outcome of that discussion was that I advised her that in my experience or my feeling is that the committee would want for the second payment, not the payment for this financial year, but for the next financial year, there should be conditions attached in legislation. Principal Act, the most important ones, regulations, the other, and then the rest can be ministerial conditions or administrative conditions. How that must be done or can be done, we haven't gotten into that area because either the minister must bring an amendment bill to the special appropriations bill when there is time. Alternatively, they can find a mechanism in the appropriation bill for the next financial year to say you can make conditions on the appropriation of the special appropriations bill. And they can take legal advice from senior counsel like they do, whether that is possible. I cannot see a problem with it as long as it's in legislation. It doesn't have to be in the same act. So it was a time thing, and as well as how long it's going to take to get that legislation through. I'm done, Chair. That was the main reason why we couldn't do it in regulations now, and why the appropriations, because why the NA side said let's then stick with putting it in the report. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Bravesh, I've noted you, Honourable Rice.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to respond to the Honourable member in terms of where MP is, Chair, I'm not too sure. I think in terms of the representation from Treasury, I was basically designated to represent the Treasury. I wasn't aware of of anyone else besides myself to attend this meeting. Chair, and then to the second point around default, maybe just to explain a bit more what we mean by default. In the event that that Eskom does not get the additional funds in November, what could happen is that they won't be able to settle debt, to settle interest payments and supplier payments, which means that even some of the government guaranteed debt that they need to settle could result in a default, meaning that that government will have to step in and then pay out all government guaranteed debt. So the bill for government will be much larger in terms of at the moment. If I stand to be corrected, the latest report we got is that Eskom debt in terms of what they have actually used from the 350 billion drawdown from the facility, they've used 280 billion. So there is a risk that 280 billion could be caught. In terms of that risk, in terms of default. Then to the honourable member around what is the actual cash flow for Eskom for 19-20. Chair, through you, in terms of the bill, the amount still remains the amount of, around the additional 26 billion for this financial year. However, as I mentioned before, is that they have also a risk included in that, in terms of if certain things do not materialize, like the sale of the Eskom Finance Company, if that doesn't materialize, then that risk is included in the 20 billion rand risk to the cash flow, which means that that they could seek an additional 20 billion rand. But, however, as has been rightly mentioned, there is no other legal mechanisms besides what's happening now in terms of the special appropriation process to seek more money, and that's why the emphasis has been placed on Eskom is to manage that risk and to ensure that they find cash within their business to mitigate, and in the event that the risk does materialize, that they find that money, because government doesn't have the resources nor does it have the legal mechanisms to look for an additional 20 billion over and above the 23 billion and the 26 billion now for the special appropriation process and for the next financial year. So, Chair, the amounts that are in the special appropriation bill is in line with what they would require for 1920 and also then for the 2020-21 financial year to ensure that they have enough cash in terms of liquidity and to ensure that they remain a solvent business, meaning that they have enough equity to run the business, basically. So, Chair, I was more clear this time, and my apologies for not explaining myself in more detail.
Okay, no, thank you. I think it's a very thorny issue, and you're not going to satisfy us with everything today. But I think what we need to take into account, colleagues, is the fact that we cannot afford to risk
and not ensure that this is done, because I think there are clear deadlines insofar as ESCOM is concerned. But I think what is good about this is that even if we approve, as I believe that we will have to, this amount of money is still going to be paid in tranches. I think perhaps what we need to do is that we must then approve, ideally, and say that this approval is on condition that conditions will be placed upon ESCOM in the manner in which we are suggesting as a committee. Because to say that we will take the process back to NA and allow NA to come up with clear stipulated conditions, then it will create a crisis for the country. I can't overstate that. I am not closing and concluding the debate, but I'm saying that we still have an opportunity to say that going forward, we can develop these additional conditions that we are suggesting as a committee and adopt with that in mind, that we will still make an input to say that this and this needs to be met in terms of those conditions. But I'm going to hand over to the chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, thank you for recognizing me. I just want to make it clear, it's not us that's going to be plunging the country into crisis. We are being coerced into a situation here through other people's incompetence. And Treasury themselves came and presented to us, and we clearly remember, option one, option two, option three, in terms of the conditions, how they would be applied. There was no mention, Advocate Jenkins, at that stage, about what you just introduced now, that having these things as regulations, you know, there's no scope for it in the bill, etc., etc. That would have been the right time to tell us exactly what the right mechanisms were. When we were discussing how to build those conditions into the legislation, and, you know, the fact again, we've all spoken, there's no blank check. Well, guess what? We're being told now, well, we're going to give a blank check and then we're going to maybe impose some conditions at a later stage. But I don't believe that there's a mechanism to do that either. So, you know, to go and retrospectively apply conditions to something we've agreed to now, I don't believe there's a mechanism for it. Frankly, I think we need to go back to the drawing board. I don't have anything on tomorrow morning after caucus. Perhaps we need to re-meet again tomorrow and discuss this properly, because I don't believe we're prepared. I don't believe we've got the sufficient information in front of us to actually continue with the meeting.
Colleagues, if I can remind you, in the last joint meeting where I think the colleague from Treasury were part of, there's a lady who was leading the team who presented the conditions, and we've raised our concerns about those conditions and reflected on how we want those conditions to be like. And time frame was given. Members, you'll help me. Time frame was given to say they must go and rework on the condition and send the new version of the conditions through the secretariat, and I will send it to the members within 7 days. I think that was the resolution that we took. I have not received anything. Secretariat, we have not received anything from Treasury, and I want your indulgence, members, and to confirm if that was our resolution as they were presenting those conditions. And we raised concern and resolved on the way forward. Is that what we have agreed upon, members? Honorable Karimi, okay? Honorable Jandu?
Chair, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, Chair, I want to concur in terms of how we unfolded in terms of the discussions on the conditions. I think that was the point that where we concluded on to say that the conditions to be strengthened and to be relooked at and a report to be given. I concur with that.
So with that having said, and us having not received the reworked conditions, what will be the way forward? Honorable Karen?
Firstly, you know, the Western Cape legislature, government's proposals that were mentioned here, as you yourself said, many of them are actually here. Actually, it is, I can think almost all of them are here in maybe a softer form. Secondly, I'm not sure what the value would be of meeting tomorrow. How is it going to change anything? In fact, the only credible explanation given has come from our own sources, meaning Advocate Jenkins. The Money Bills Act, the PFMA, consideration for the future. I think, Advocate Jenkins, if you can craft that section, show it to Ravesh and Impi, we can slide that in as the explanation. That is not our view, but you have to help the executives since they're so weak, though they've got 10 times more staff than you have, right? And it's not an attack on you, you're here. It's an attack on Treasury. That we're doing our job, as defined by the Constitution. So it's an attack on the minister in the first instance and the DG in the second instance, right? It's not on you personally. MP should not be here. I mean, it's astonishing. Ask Comrade Chairperson. In the NA, she was there with us 25 hours a day. Why is she not here? It's the disdain you have, the Treasury, for the National House of, what is it, Council of Provinces, maybe even Parliament too. So I'm looking at this thing again. Actually, the issue isn't that many of the issues that we're raising are not covered. They're too soft. What I would like to suggest is I can't see anything changing dramatically by tomorrow or next week. There are legal strictures which militate against it. It means changing the constitution, changing the laws of the country, and overhauling the whole NCOP. That's what you're really calling for. You know, I actually don't think we can do what Mr. Ryder is, and it's a dangerous precedent, you know, and it was given the exceptional circumstances. We are where we are. We're all unhappy, as he himself acknowledges. But sending it back to the NA, I'm totally against that. I don't know what other comrades think. I'm totally against that. It's really opening up a whole lot of issues. That means, you know, you'll have to look at constitutional amendments and so on. Let's change the role of the NCOP, right? You know, I really think that's out. So the other issue that we have to look at as a committee is we have no choice. That's the reality. Whatever our views about ESCOM's performance and so on, many of the things you're saying about ESCOM's reluctance are covered here. Yeah, it says many of the things you said, Mr. Akram. Did you have a chance to read it? They did. They're just too soft, maybe. We can alter it. What I would like to suggest is, at this stage, let's not take any decision about coming back to what's going to change. Why don't we look at each of these paragraphs on the recommendations and beliefs, what the committee's views are, with some of the things that are related, and just see how we can strengthen them. And you know, I don't see, well, you know, like, some of the issues we are raising are policy differences, actually, on the role of the NCOP. That's what it is about. It's a difference of view on what the role of the NCOP is. And it borders almost on, like, federalism. You know, the notion that the National Assembly was held to ransom by provinces. And deeply underlying it, whether people are necessarily conscious of it or not, is the old debate of 1994 or 1991 to 1996. Are we a federal state or a unitary state? And I know we are emphatic. We're a unitary state with federal features. The way we present it is our unique system of cooperative governance that has spheres of government, not levels of government, right? But underlying the issues that they are raising, the DA, Mr. Ryder in particular, is a very different notion of what the state is. I don't think the ANC can agree. We reluctantly agree to provinces. We keep debating this. The ANC still has a resolution. on the shape and size and number of provinces adopted 10 years ago. Right? We don't buy this thing. We agreed to it, and it was a compromise, and now we are stuck with it because we have our own provincial fiefdoms. You think if you remove the Eastern Cape, our traditional leader from there will be happy? There's no provincial house of traditional leaders, just to tease him. I'm a Zulu, you think I'll be happy? I mean, we have our own king.
My number is not here.
Yeah, we have our own king, right? So, I mean, really, you know, yeah, she's a petty. Never mind that she's got four or five people claiming to be kings, but that's another story. All I'm saying, comrades, is, you know, Mr. Ryder, underlying some of the things you're saying are differences, and I don't think the ANC will agree. I can't speak for it, but at least I don't agree, and my understanding of ANC policies won't agree. But on the issues, we can deal with them there, and we're stuck with this thing. We can make a lot of points here, and we can, in the debate, hit hard on national trade, even the ANC. But coming back tomorrow is not going to make any difference, or even next week.
I'm going to give to Honorable Mkiva, and if he's not speaking to the recommendations after him, I will request members to go to page 14. Item 6, where we're going to focus on the recommendations of the report. Try to... Do you want to speak now?
Yeah. I was going to support the Yes.
And as we do this, honorable members, I'm requesting that as much as we agree that we are in this situation because of the human factor, the management that was there, ESCOM, the non-ethical behavior which was there, and with these conditions that were coming, we want to try by all means to avoid those things not to happen again and just give in money. But I'm requesting that over and above, let's put the most important thing in the equation, the people, the cities, because they are the one that are going to suffer most in the decisions that we're going to take. And we still have an opportunity to deal with an oversight on the department, treasury, Department of Enterprise, and ESCOM as oversight body. I remember Honorable Gordano said that in some cases, or as they give in money, they will not give money as a lump sum. It will be in tranches, and people have to motivate, apply and motivate, and only after the consideration by Treasury, that money will be given out. So such things needs to be there in the conditions. Honorable members, can we focus on page 14, the recommendations, please? Page 15. Yes, Honorable Akar.
Yeah, on 6.1, I probably need to include the 6.1, line 3. Well, let's take line 2, right?
Provision
of frontier financial support to the region has the potential to compromise administration programs. We should be able to take some changes to say that will compromise. We will compromise program. I know what it is.
Okay. Well, still on that page 15, or will members prefer the table to read each. Okay. Honorable Chandu.
Chair, thank you very much. I think I want to focus on page 15, 6.3.
Yes.
Yeah. The Minister of Finance and the Minister of Public Enterprises should ensure that there's a full compliance with all conditions prescribed for Eskom before and after appropriated funds are transferred. Should there be non-compliance, the appropriation consequence management should be instituted specifically with include the storage of funds and report the matter to Parliament within a reasonable time. I think I want to emphasize that point.
Very important one. Honorable Karim?
Yeah, it's exactly the point that the Chief is saying. It's covered there. In fact, that's strong enough, really. Mm-hmm. It actually says it. It's full compliance. It's not just compliance, it says full compliance. It's with all the conditions, right? Before and after. In fact, it's stronger than the Western Cape. Should there be non-compliance, appropriate consequent management should be expeditiously, and the stoppage of funds, and the report matter, and report the matter to Parliament within a reasonable time. I would say not within a reasonable time, within a month. But I'm not strong about that. But can we go through it completely sequentially, because I've got a problem with 6.2. So if we look at 6.1, let's look at 2
before we go to 6.3. Okay. The Minister of Finance shall gazette the conditions prescribed for the Minister of Public Enterprise, which are meant for the Eskom bailout, within a reasonable period after the adoption of this report by the House. There's continuous usage of reasonable.
Exactly.
And what is reasonable to me might not be reasonable to you.
Exactly. So I was going to say, we're on the same. You see, we are on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying within 3 months. Or 2 months, within 3 months. I think 3 months. Within 3 months, actually, because you know why? It's MTBPS period, then there's December. Look, we're not inhumane, okay? Then there's January. You're also a human being. You will go on holiday. The minister's got to do his farming and so on. 3 months is reasonable, right?
6.3, which one did you propose?
6.2, we say, within rather than a reasonable period, we say within 3 months.
Yeah, 6.3, you said?
No, 6.2. Then I want to add, if possible, the last, add a new sentence after the House. Put, the committee requires National Treasury to explain the conditions to the joint meeting referred to in paragraph 514. Because because you mandated me in a way to start doing something, what I've actually done under belief, right, is after the explanation that Advocate Jenkins, MP and Ravesh do, by let's say 2 o'clock, right, we say something like this. The committee under 512, a new 512, the committee believes very strongly that the conditions for the allocation of the money in this bill should be set out in regulations by the minister. And we must agree here that we're never going to agree with the DA. I think it'll be foolhardy, quite frankly, to put conditions into the law. I really think it'll be foolhardy. There are very exceptional circumstances here. It cannot happen. I really think the ANC would be foolhardy to agree to that. But hey, who am I? One person. So I must agree to disagree between Dennis and me. I'm not speaking for the ANC. So I think it's reasonable for us to say the committee believes very strongly that the conditions for the allocation of money in this bill should be set out in regulations by the minister and wanted a clause. We can tighten the language, right? The team can tighten it. And wanted a clause relating to this to be inserted in the bill. That's what we really wanted as the ANC. Something in the bill that simply says that the condition that are prescribed for ESCOM, and that's what we should have said in the law if we could, right, must be set out in regulations that are tabled in Parliament and take into account some of the, take into account, that means the recommendations in the report to Parliament. That's what we should have done. But you gave a very strong argument, actually. How can I not remember all this? That actually it would have meant the whole cycle of, you know, we could have done it if they gave us the bill in July. But we're coming to that, right? So basically, Comrade Chair, should be set on the regulations by the minister and wanted the clause relating to be inserted in the bill. However, National Treasury strongly argued, or really we should say Advocate Jenkins strongly argued on behalf of National Treasury, that this will seriously hold up the process of allocating money to ESCOM, lead to a default, explain what, and exacerbate the challenges, including Then the second point is the Money Bills Act process. The third point is the PFMA. And the fourth point you made, Advocate Jenkins, is that it needs to look into how to deal with this in the, what is it, what was it, in February and so on, right? So if you can do that section with Ravesh and MP and give it to us, then the section below that will say, the committee grudgingly, Comrade Chair, notice, colleague, grudgingly, and very grudgingly, we can say the committee very grudgingly, right, to make Mr. Dennis Ryder a bit happier, although you'll say, you see now, this guy is spinning, but it's true. Very grudgingly, and very reluctantly, we can add, very reluctantly. I don't know why Estelle is smiling there. Estelle, don't smile, because you're a neutral civil servant here. The committee very grudgingly and very reluctantly agreed that the conditions should not be put in regulations, provided that National Treasury and DPE report at least once every 2 months to a joint meeting of SECOA and SCOA, and with the agreement, because you can't take decisions of the Public Enterprises Committees, the Public Enterprises Committees in the NA and NCOP, I'm sure they'll agree, right? Mm. You can bully them anyway. The committee is against special appropriation bills being introduced, not as Ravesh, to Parliament, unless they are absolutely, I'd like to add a bigger word, but you know, it's a word that most, it's a big English word here, we're not the, we strictly speaking, I mean, it's a misnomer to say we're an English-speaking country. But I would rather put, unless they are inexorably necessary, Ravesh. It's impossible, but that's too big a word. I don't know if somebody, Zolani, you're a man of words, right? Think of another smaller word between absolutely and inexorably necessary in view of exceptional circumstances, Dennis. And should this be the case, the National Treasury has to introduce these bills timelessly so that Parliament can have more time and space to process these bills. We should be careful what we say here. I'd like to see something else, but then they'll take us to court and say, you see, the committee itself is saying they didn't have enough time to process the bill. So, you know, although we'll go and send Advocate Jenkins and win the case, with the amount of money wasted, the money that they say they want to go to the poll, but they'll take us to court. I would like to say something else, but Comrade Chair, I'll resist. So having said that, we then say that once the minister is gazetted, within 3 months, then as soon as Parliament can meet, we explain these conditions. The minister or the DG must come, no less. That's a decision you and the co-chair must make, no less. Don't have the meeting, send them back. That's my view. We don't want to put that here, but the committee requires the National Treasury to explain the conditions to the joint meeting referred to in that paragraph above. Okay? I don't know what people feel.
Thank you, Chair. I note the Honourable Karim's apparent concern for my well-being, and I appreciate it. But I'd just like to ask for some clarity, because I think we are going to agree to disagree. I just wanted to get some clarity on those last two paragraphs that were read out. We don't have them in front of us, but
yeah.
And they seem to be contradictory.
Right, let's see.
And I just want to ask, you know, are you proposing regulations get passed, or are you proposing that regulations don't get passed and that there be a quarterly report back? I seem to get both messages.
Because it's not, you know, but I'll go through it carefully, very quickly. We very grudgingly and very reluctantly agree that the conditions should not be put in regulations, right? The conditions don't be put in regulations, provided that the conditions are set out in the recommendations below are implemented and they report on progress once every 2 months to the four committees, including Public Enterprise. So it's a way, things are very fast, right? And then we said, in general, you want, maybe we put the word in general, but then that loosens and softens it. But that's something we can sort out, it's not something that's major. The next point is that we don't like special appropriation bills, unless they are absolutely or inexorably or whatever word is necessary, in view of it, and we can even say, and exceptional circumstances dictated. Maybe that's stronger, eh? And exceptional circumstances. Is somebody taking notes here, right? Because I can't remember what I'm saying here. And exceptional circumstances dictate. You see, dictate is dictated, right? And should this be the case, that means only in these circumstances, right? Should this be the case, the National Treasury has to introduce these bills timely so that Parliament can have more time and space to process these bills. In other words, Mr. Ryder, we are conceding that we should have more time and space.
and space, not just time. But we don't agree with you that we have to go to the provinces necessarily. But there's no harm if this bill hadn't come towards the end of the year. Let's say it came in June. If you had said that, and Mr. Jenkins would have said, no, no, there's no need to do it. I'm sure the chair and most of us have said, doesn't matter if we don't have to do it. What's the harm? Let's go to the province. Because ESCOM affects all of us. So what we're trying to say here, and I don't buy this thing. My view is, and I'm unapologetic about it, and I don't need a mandate for everything, Comrade Chair. I don't agree, Treasury, that you could not have brought the bill earlier. You knew what was going on. The minister said it in February. You yourself undermined your own argument. You could have brought this bill in March, April. But the reason why one is sympathetic, to be fair to them, but I wasn't even going to be here. In March, I'd already made another plan for my life, right? So look, the irony is I'm here, right? We were having an election. Also, the DA was expected to win, remember? In coalition with their friends, the EFF. They were going to win first, 50% plus. I can't resist this, my brother. And they were going to win, have their heads down, right? So, Frank Jenkins was going to resign, because as a bureaucrat, he feels he's served one government and that's enough. He doesn't want to get involved. So in short, what I'm saying is, National Treasury, I don't buy this argument, Chairperson. They could have brought this bill in March, and then as soon as we came back, you know, the rule kicks in. You can do it within a week if our House Chair and if the NA Speaker was on board, we could have introduced it within a week or two, and we could have started processing it. In the early period, you know, we had more time. Now we're in MTBPS cycle. So sometimes one thinks it's a conspiracy by National Treasury and by departments, Comrade Chair. It's a conspiracy. You bring bills to us, and I'm not saying you did it consciously, Ravesh. I know, I chaired five committees in this parliament. There's one department that used to bring a bill at particular times. But then, you know, it wasn't a money like this. We sent it back to them many times. If you want to Google it, you will see. Many times, they said, no, we're not bringing it a bill. So, it is covered, meaning we're saying, we've got no choice. In other words, to put it in a nutshell, Dennis, we have no choice. We would have ideally liked it in regulations. Here we disagree, you want it in law. I don't know. That's the only difference we have. So we are saying let's tighten the recommendation in 2 weeks. So the relation, the deal, in other words, the trade-off is, to use the word these people like using department officials, the trade-off is, okay, we can't put it there for the reasons he explained, but at the same time, we're toughening our recommendation. And 6.3, Mr. Arkham, it's tougher than even what you got. It's very strong, a surprise, and I read it now, Comrade Chair. 6.3 is very good, and Jody, you're right. It's tough. Look at this. Look at the choice of words. Whoever crafted this needs to be complimented. It's very tough. It's like a politician writing this who's annoyed.
Then we go to 6.7. Dennis
Ryder, you could have written
6.7.
Yeah, Comrade Chair, 6.5. Last sentence is, this should be done as soon as possible after the adoption of the report by the House. And I think we should put in and a quarterly report provided to the relevant committee, the four committees, public enterprises and appropriations. Why I say quarterly report, Comrade Chair, you know our experience, right? You see, there's another thing we need to think about, colleagues who are new here. We have big mouths. We like telling the executive, you know what, we're holding you to account. But we don't hold ourselves to account. Often we make recommendations, Comrade Solani, and we don't implement it, partly because we don't have the will, but often because these committees don't have the time. So it's no use us saying, we're going to meet, we've said we're going to meet until in 2 months. That can happen, right? But if we say now quarterly they must give us a briefing, that can't be in addition to meeting once every 2 months. So they can give us written reports. And what we do then is, if the report is unacceptable, as we've done in the last 5 years, Comrade Chair, we call them in and say, no, now we want you to explain to us, have you revived and accelerated the implementation of the delayed infrastructure repair and maintenance program? So we add, in other words, Comrade Chair, in the last line, and a quarterly report provided to the relevant committees on progress in this regard. Okay?
Yeah. 6.6 on the CRO, we're fine. And CEO.
Mm-hmm.
6.7.
Committee Chair, 6.7 is quite strong as well. I mean, it's repeating the point that Jadu raised on 6.3. It's repeating, which is not. It's saying consequence management, and it's asking for a report, a progress of, within 3 months of the adoption of the report. I mean, that's a problematic thing. It should be a regular.
That is within 3 months.
Yeah, but you see the problem here, Comrade Chair, just think about, maybe I'm wrong, right? Can members just apply our minds? I'm maybe wrong. Since the Minister of Public Enterprise Insurance Eskom urgently takes steps to improve the implementation of contracts regarding mismanagement of funds, a progressive servant of Parliament within 3 months after the adoption. Why are we getting one progress report on consequence management? It should be included in the six weekly or eight weekly report. Regular progress reports should be provided. Why one report within 3 months? Isn't this a bit like saying it should be regular report?
You are correct.
Can we change that? Okay. So can somebody just chat easy to do? What will be the wording? That regular report in this regard also be provided to the committee. So.
On page 16, 6.8, 9, 10. 11, 12.
Chair, I think 6.11. I think this one is very important in terms of, because what we are looking at here is for Eskom to be viable again. So it is saying that the entity should also develop a debt collection mechanism strategy for all debts owned by private household and including Soweto community. I think that point is also for Eskom to be able to prove that in terms of for them to be viable again in terms of their debt collection. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Karim, your mic is on. Do you want to speak?
Sorry.
Okay.
Why is firing Lubabalo? These people think it's a personal attack on them. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's not rubbish. You're a great guy. I'm sure you work 25 hours a day in the week.
So nothing on page 16.
But you can get very personal about me. I don't mind. I really don't mind. I like the attack.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Karim, I think now we will go to the adoption of the report with those additions.
Chairperson, to take you back, I just want to confirm, we've asked Mr. Karim now to provide us with the wording because we couldn't keep up that long. Now, is there going to be a corresponding recommendation? Because it was a long under the observations, and I think some of that must come under the recommendations. None of that. About the time frames. Okay. So there's no new recommendation.
Agreed, Chair.
So you send it back to me, and then once I look at it, I will then send it back to the Chair and yourself, and then you forward it to the other one. And to everybody, so that you see, in second, you don't read the whole report, just look at the words, it might be orange in color. I don't know what color it is.
Okay, honorable members, my apologies. We must first start by adopting the special bill. As indicated before, can I get the mover for the adoption of the bill?
I can earlier move.
You can now move. You move.
I move.
Okay, yes, seconder. Honorable Mamarahan, different view, FF Plus.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I cannot adopt or approve this bill for obvious reasons. Also, it was indicated that more money will be needed to put into this hole. I know that Mr. Karim is going to make comments on this. He's more than welcome. It's his right. He's been waiting for this for the whole day. At least I'm consistent in my views, sir.
Our friendship is broken.
Did we have one?
The reason why he's broken is having, look at the color of his tie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Honorable Ryder.
Thank you, Chair.
Can you tell us which faction of the DA is speaking on behalf of?
No, he has done that already. He looked at his tie. You can speak.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you, Chair. Yes, the Democratic Alliance must object to this bill. I think that I've made my points clear, and at the very least we should make that amendment for the conditions to be put in the regulations, and then refer it back to the National Assembly with that amendment. So, yes, certainly, we can't adopt this bill.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, that's abstain.
Thank you very much. I think majority have agreed, adopted the bill. Now we come to the report, Honourable Members, with amendments and additions. Can I get a formal mover? Honourable Njadu?
Thank you, Chair. I'm hereby formally move for the adoption of the report with all points raised by the members. Thank you.
Seconder?
I also formally second the move for the adoption.
Okay. Reservations?
Thank you, Chair. The Democratic Alliance would like to reserve its rights in this respect, certainly until we've read those amendments as written down. Thank you.
Thank you. FF Plus.
Thank you, Chair. Also, I'd like to have the final report before we state our case, but obviously, since I'm not just supporting the bill, supporting the report won't make a difference. Putting prescripts there won't make a difference in money going into a black hole.
Okay, EFF?
EFF abstain.
Thank you. The report, okay, Honorable Karim.
Governor Chair, as normally happens, we note at the bottom of the report that normally the DA says they reserve the case, but they seem to have a mandate, so you just say the DA opposes the report and the bill, and the EFF abstains, and the Freedom Front, we note that the bottom here, so that so they're not responsible for that report.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Karim, for that. And the report is agreed to. Honorable Members, according to the program, we are supposed to deal with the minutes. And members were requested to comment on the minutes. We are going to the first set of the minutes of the 18th of September 2019. Page 1, any wrong spelling of the names there? None. Page 2. Page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, sorry Estella, I see you're getting hot and requested the aircon to be reduced. Page 7. Can you adopt the minutes? Honorable Mamaragane? Seconder? Can we switch on the mic when you speak, please, for record purposes. Yeah.
I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. Seconder. Honorable Jandu.
I second, Chair.
Thank you. The second set is that of the 9th of October 2019. On the first page, everything is fine. Second page. Third page. Fourth page, fifth page, sixth page, and seventh. Honorable Ryder.
Just on a point of order, Chair, this was a joint meeting with ourselves and the National Assembly.
Oh, this is a joint meeting. It should be approved by the joint committee. Thank you. Thank you for that. Not necessary. Okay, just help us, Secretariat, administratively.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, it does not necessarily mean, Chairperson, just because it was a joint, we must adopt the minutes as a joint. Each and every individual committee adopts its own minutes, but we reflect on the minutes, true reflection of the committee. That this was a joint meeting, and also have an underliner to say the list of members of that committee will be reflected on the minutes of the other committee.
Jenkins? Advocate Jenkins? It's a small matter, and we have been involved in different structures, and we had different experiences. Can you help us so that we don't do something wrong?
No, ma'am. Yeah, well, I would suggest, ma'am, that for the purpose of this committee, you approve what happened through this committee, because it was not a joint committee, sitting as a joint committee. It is not a major procedural issue, but how it usually works is the committees will adopt the minutes separately. What will happen is one will look at whether the members are satisfied with whether the minutes reflect what happened during the meeting from their perspective. So otherwise we'll have to meet jointly again, which just for the purpose of getting the minutes, and I don't think that's been the practice in procedural issues, ma'am.
Apart from that, I think it's also difficult to get joint meetings. Do you want to speak? Okay. 22, 18. Do we have the 17? Okay, I'll come to that. Honorable Mkiva?
Well, Chair, maybe let me just help by saying that, Chair, let's note this minute.
Legally, what does that mean?
Well, I'm a little bit worried. I mean, a practice might have been a practice. And it may not necessarily have been a best practice in this instance. So noting the minutes doesn't necessarily mean that we are adopting them, but we are noting them and that there's nothing wrong with them. They reflect what we spoke about, but the appropriate platform to adopt them is the actual meeting as such.
Okay, Honorable Karim, can we tap into your experience?
Firstly, very interesting.
You are talking with two mics now.
Oh, sorry. How did that happen?
Hang on.
Oh, that one.
Yeah,
okay. Sorry, firstly, it's very good to speak like a lawyer now, as he is, and he's right. But the rules don't allow for noting. Is that right, Esther Lubabalo? It's adopting. So actually, the rules have to change. So I think while Comrade Zolani is right, I think because it is actually logical, but the rules don't cater for such a thing as noting. It's your call, Chairperson. I don't think there's a position on it. Do you really want us to note it or adopt it?
Can we then adopt the minutes if we agree that it's a true reflection of the discussion of the day on the 9th? The seconder, Mama Rakhane, has moved. Who seconded? Honorable Chandu. You second it.
I second, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. I've skipped the set of the 17th September. Page 1. You have it, eh? Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. A mover. It's nothing to be corrected. Can I get a mover? Honorable Mama Rahani, the seconder.
Chair, thank you very much. I second.
Okay, thank you. The last set is that of the 22nd of October. It's page 1. Page 2, page 3, I hope I'm not far, page 4, a mover for the minutes as a true reflection, Honorable Jadu.
Thank you, Chair. I'm moving for adoption.
Honorable Mama Rahani, or Honorable Okam. Thank you.
I second.
Thank you. Honorable members, we are at the end of our meeting for today. But there is something... Oh, Honorable Ryder.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, I was in receipt yesterday of a letter from the joint committees of condolences sent from the committees. And I just wanted to voice my appreciation on behalf of my family and myself to say thank you. It was a good reminder that we remain opponents and not enemies, and I appreciated the sentiments that were voiced in the letter, so I wanted to just say thank you for that.
Honorable Ryder, thank you for your words. In my culture, we don't think such things, but we are with you, and as team appropriation and finance, we will wish you, we receive the same news and our condolences to you and your family, and we hope that during this time, God will be with you. Thank you very much. Honorable members, if you will allow me on the last item, which is the closing remarks. Yesterday, I presented the consolidated program for the term until we close on the 5th of December. And it's very, very hectic. And as the kind of committee that we are given time frame. We have now been complaining about the special bill that we have not been given enough time. But then we are to deal with the MTBPS problem, program and the DORA. I'm going to request, because I looked at it afterwards, that tried to digest it and consulted, and I want to have some proposal to you. I will just request Ulubabalo to talk to one issue, not the whole program, the issue of the consultation to provinces, because it's giving us more pressure, and most members that are coming from the rural provinces, it's going to be difficult for them to travel and be here on time.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, this morning, after we presented the consultative program yesterday, the Chairperson called me, especially raising the issue of tight time frames. with respect to the briefing of provinces and also the meeting that the committee must convene thereafter to consider negotiating mandates. And then the chairperson proposed minor amendments. I wanted to flight this, but unfortunately I can't operate this issue. FPL is still trying to see if she can get hold of the colleague, but I will try and stick to it. The committee is scheduled to brief the provinces on the 21st of November,
which is a Thursday,
on the Revenue Amendment Bill. Then the following day, in the program that we presented yesterday, we will sit as a committee to consider the negotiating mandate that will have been emanating from the provinces. So, like I flagged this issue yesterday, that the time, because of traveling, is going to be an issue. Because there are members who need connecting flights, there are members, probably the other provinces would want to convene public hearings in areas that are not closer to city centers, wherein it would be easy to travel from that area to the airport. So after I said that, the chairperson proposed that the meeting of Friday 22nd be moved backward to Monday. Forward to Monday the 25th of November. And then the following day we'll consider a final mandate. So my further proposal to the proposal that Chairperson made is with respect to the starting time of that meeting on Monday, because it is a Monday. We would like to suggest that meeting we can even convene it, say, at 11:30, because it's going to be a short meeting. Just to consider negotiating mandates from provinces and the issues that provinces will be raising on the division of revenue amendment bill. So we are proposing that probably 11:30 might be okay for members, considering the issue of traveling, if that is okay. I think I will end that, Chairperson. Oh, secondly, on Tuesday, that meeting of final mandate, again, we convene it at between 1 and 2 o'clock midday, so that we give provinces enough time to sit in the morning to finalize their final mandate and transmit them to us and also to members, and then we'll kind of incorporate them into the report before we come and present the report to the committee. We must, in fact, come with a report ready for adoption. Members will table the final mandate and then thereafter consider and adopt them, and then the report, now because on that day we must consider and finalize the report as a committee, because it will be going to the House the following day on Wednesday. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Tweet.
Thank you, Chair. I personally don't have a problem with that. If you could just mail us the revised schedule then, please.
Ryder.
Thank you, Chair. I think it makes sense in terms of practicality. I hope it just all works out practically. And the 11:30 might be a bit tight, but for some of the flights that are coming in. But I think, in general, happy. Thank you.
Honourable Member.
Chair, yes, I agree. I think it will give us enough chance. It's acceptable.
Honourable Members on the front row. You're fine. Okay. The main reason is that it will be difficult. The legislatures decide on the timing, the time of the meeting on Thursday, and we don't know what time will they decide on. And we will be expected to be here on Friday, so hence we thought it will be unfair for members to do that. And one other thing that we must share with you, because we are new, I have asked from the Secretariat how is it done, is that Treasury will give you the technical support when you go to report to the province. You will be having a technical support from Treasury.
Any other question on the matter? We are fine. Thank you. Okay. I'm told here by the advisor that you'll be receiving the analysis from your specific provinces as you go there, so that you go there empowered on relevant issues. Thank you very much, members. We have had fruitful discussions. And I see the secretariat here, they are so excited. They don't want this meeting to end. Lubabalo?
In fact, I am, as we have been like continuously considering these bills, members and the committee at large, in fact, has been raising sharply the issue of timelines, public participation issue, and my worry is the monster we are going to deal with, MTPS, Division of Revenue, it is going to be even worse, because the Money Bills Amendment, as amended, especially the last section of section 12, subsection 9, states that the committees on appropriations must report to the relevant houses within 30 days after the tabling of the national adjustment budget. So, okay, it continues and says, or as soon as reasonable possible thereafter. The issue is, we are going to deal with the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill over a very, very short period of time, which normally is supposed to be dealt with over 6 weeks, right? I mean, over 6 weeks, yes, right? But unfortunately, we'll deal with that within a week. So I thought we need to be upfront so that members don't get shocked at that time and become mad. The issue there, it's not that as supposed to, we don't want to assist the committee to comply with the constitutional requirement in terms of public participation, but there's this legislation which has got tight time frames that we must comply with, because if we don't, then there will be kind of other unintended consequences. And maybe if I'm not explaining it much better, Advocate Chengin can also add his voice on this matter. Thanks.
Advocate Jenkins? I think, thank
you. My apologies. We're talking about the MTBPS, Chair, and we have we've amended the bill last year to deal with those tight time frames. So he's correct, it's 30 days. To report on the MTBPS, but as I understand, I'm just looking at the Act, ma'am. Just give me a second, because as soon as reasonably possibly thereafter. So if it's not possible to do it exactly within 30 days from the appropriation side, 15 days on the finance side, there must just be a valid reason why it couldn't have been done. That's on the MTBPS, and if I understand you correctly, Lobovali, and the Division of Revenue. Division of Revenue, we've done the same, but it has other implications. Sorry, my apologies, I was busy with the report while I was talking. So let me just look at the one is, I think we've done the same there. So if there is reason, for instance, that public participation is going to take a day or two longer, then the prevailing principle should be public participation, because that's a constitutional obligation. So if the Division of Revenue Amendment goes to provinces and it gets stuck there for a day or two, one needs to respect that, if I can say it like that. I'm not anticipating anything. But we've made provision for that in the amendment bill, just to give that reasonable appreciation, margin of appreciation for these kind of things. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think the most important thing that we must note from this comment is that instead of the six-week cycle, we'll be having 5 days to deal with this. And this is a challenge that we ourselves have been complaining about of enough time to do public participation. So we just want to share it with the committee so that the committee understands what we are faced with. We have tried to talk amongst ourselves to see how we can change it. There's no way that we can change it. And we are just praying that come next year, Treasury must help us. If there are bills that need to be, more especially in finance, that needs to be dealt with, they need to be given to us in time so that we don't rush these things and we want the views of the public. So with that having been said, honorable members, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned and stay blessed. For those who are traveling, travel safely. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.